So what are your options? Give me the first one, the symbols.
So we have four tasks.
Four tasks, okay. How many experimental groups?
That's what we are not sure about. Like, these four tasks are going to be actually two groups of tasks.
Mm-hmm.
And then...
Yeah,
one with example and one without for both two languages. And then...
Okay, so two languages and then two tasks. Okay.
Two tasks. And then two types of tasks. That means four tasks.
Okay, so four tasks.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we thought maybe we could divide people into four and just give everyone like one individual task. Or we could divide people into two groups and then give them...
here's the question that you always want to ask when you're doing one of these. What do you want to find out? What do you want to find out?
You want to find out whether if people see an explanation with a code example, would it make them better, comprehensive?
Okay. Well, then let's start out. If that's the one thing you want to know, with or without an example, why don't we make it two experimental groups?
Yeah, but we also want to compare if it's different with one language or another. So we have two languages.
Okay.
We want to see if, for example, Java benefits from examples better than Python.
It's called a two-factor design,
yeah.
And that's okay. But that would be three and four. Again, nothing wrong with that. Totally fine.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in the tasks... Do you have, how many tasks are you going to have them do?
Two.
Every person has two tasks.
Like, for each language, two tasks, which is one with an example and one without.
Yeah, but
we were thinking to let everyone.
Oh,
right?
So this is language. Okay, wait. This is one language and this is another language?
Yeah.
Okay, so let's do this. Let's call language L1,
yeah.
And then L2. We're just kind of drawing it out. You can see how this is how experimental design goes.
Yeah.
You sit and you negotiate with yourselves trying to figure out what's going on. Now, I hope we can get through this for everybody, but if we have to get to the lecture, we can. But let's try to at least do this one, and then I'll try to get us more time by going quickly through the lecture stuff. Okay, so L1, L2, and then the tasks are task 1 and task 2 for each of those?
With an example or without an example.
That's these, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so with...
And.
But is it the same task?
Okay, so it's going to be almost similar.
Okay.
For one language, it's the same task. Other one gets the example, and the other one doesn't.
Okay. In that case... I think it's that.
Yeah.
Right now.
Maybe we could combine like everyone who doesn't get an example does the both without an example.
This is already complicated.
Yeah.
So if it were me, I'd go simple. And so with and without an example, I would go, do we have an eraser? I don't know. For now, I'll do that. If it was me, I would put a symbol for each of those groups just so that you can keep track of it mentally. And so I'm going to say with... let's go. Example, and then no.
It's the only one we have.
Example, and then no. Oh, that's strange.
Now, it's very practical, but we should have...
Oh, it's also very
one.
Wet.
Yeah, sorry, that's mine.
Oh, okay.
My mistake.
Okay, that's very bizarre. But anyway. to me, it would be this.
Yeah.
I think that the thing I would also consider, do you need to have that factor? If you're interested in that, you can do it. But you do lose statistical power because you have to split the sample size. And so that means 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. If all of us do it, That's divided by four, about three per group. It's not a lot of data.
Yeah.
If you did it the other way, you get six in the two groups. And so this is the consideration you always have to make. How many people are we going to have in each group? Now, another thing you could do, you could go within subjects and go like this and like that. The only downside is, for the class, do you think this biases the results or not? And I will tell you, I don't know the answer. I'm just asking. Well, you'd have to do it in the same language if you did it that way. If you wanted to do it with a second language, then you could go and then make this the same and then just make it a separate language. Right? So then it would have, you'd have only two for each, and so it's kind of complicated. But yes, that's the point. But if you did it this way, you would get full power of everybody in the class. Everybody would do it. But you don't know for sure that this won't bias your results. I don't know what the right answer is. So you, at the end of the day for Friday, you just have to choose and hope. Because rebellions are built on hope. Does that joke make any sense? No, like, does it? Is that, does it translate? Star Wars references, do they translate at all? Okay, they're not funny anyway, but like, anyway. I got a feeling that if we do this for every single group, we're going to spend the entire hour and a half doing that. So why don't we do this? Why don't we move on, do some of the R stuff just so that you get it, and I will try to make sure it's not like the whole time so we get some time. Okay. Now, for this particular one, this is the first time that we're actually going to start looking at statistics. And the, you do not have to, you do not have to. If you have a laptop, you're welcome to follow along. If you don't want to follow along, that's okay too. Hello. I don't know if it should start. There we go. Okay. So for this particular one, because I'm going to be bouncing back and forth between R and the lecture notes, I'm going to start R and leave the lecture notes up, but I'm not going to go full screen. So it'll be a little bit harder to see, but I just want to make sure, otherwise it's going to be a pain in the butt. So, okay, great. And the other thing that you can, you don't have to do it right now, but if you do R either professionally or you use it a lot, I would recommend against doing it the way that I'm going to show you. Not because it's bad, but because there are other tools that are better, that are easier to use. However, if you just go to the website and you click download on R, this is what you'll find. But there's a better tool called RStudio. It's a little bit easier to use. So if you'd like to try to follow along in RStudio, that's okay too. I'm only showing you it this way because this is what you get when you download, and I just want you to be aware what's there. And the code will be the same, so it won't make any difference. Does that make sense? RStudio is an actual development environment created by professionals. Actually, a friend of mine, Hadley Wickham, really good guy. This is the R console. Okay. Now, the second thing is, whenever you're messing with R, be aware R is, as a programming language, a complete disaster, right? It's just a complete mess, right? It's a mess in every possible way. The documentation is horrible, just absolutely horrible. The libraries make no sense at all. What you often type for code may as well look like someone took a crap on the page. And so I always say that first because I'm sorry. I did not design it. It is not my fault. I will try. Oh, and if you get a textbook in R, many of them go out of date seemingly instantly because the language designers don't have any mechanism of peer review for library changes. So basically, you'll get one book, and then it'll immediately not be useful, and you have to change it. Even when I write my slides every year, I have to rewrite them every time because something magically changes for no reason. So it could be that this will all be a disaster. I don't think so because this stuff is relatively straightforward. But be aware, R isn't a pretty and fun language, and it just is what it is. However, even though that's the case, it's free for statistics. It's commonly used, and it does give you the correct answer. So there's that. But it's just a warning that R isn't a pleasant thing. Okay, the second thing is when you use R, and if you just pull up the R console, the first thing you get is this crazy crap, right? All this stuff that probably no human ever has ever read, right? Including myself. And it gives you all sorts of weird information that's super nice and user-friendly, like r.appgui1.697328x86_64-appledarwin, which obviously is exactly the information you were looking for, right? And then you've got this little arrow, and then you've got this blinking cursor, which of course gives you all the information you want about how to solve your problems. It's a console, and it is what it is, right? So, but by show of hands, how many have used a console before? Okay, good. So you at least know what's going on there. And how many of you used R in some capacity before? Okay, so some of you. What have you done in R, just so I have some sense?
Lots of analysis.
Lots of analysis?
Yeah.
Okay, so you've done quite a bit in R. So this might be old hat for you.
Yeah, should be.
Okay, well, then I apologize for that, too. This might be boring for you. So, but for some, who has not used R? Okay, so for some of you, this will be maybe a learning experience. And part of what we're going to do tomorrow especially, we're not just going to be writing commands and then teaching you how to do the syntax. What my goal is not that. My goal is to generate some stuff using R just so you can see some code and how it's done. And then when it's done, to teach you how to interpret what R gives you. Because that's the part that's hard, right? Typing the command you can find in a textbook. But then it gives you this weird crap, and you have to say, what does this mean? That's where most of my students have the biggest struggle, until they get the hang of it. Like, most of my PhD students have done this a lot, and so they're kind of used to it at this point, but it takes time. So, does that make sense? Is that reasonable? Is that interesting to you to at least do that kind of stuff, or not really? Okay. All right. Okay, so basic things, John Chambers wrote it, it's based on a language called S. You would think that R is really old, it's not, came out in 2000, so like this isn't some, they don't have a good excuse about it being so badly designed, it's relatively new, but it is what it is. It is quite difficult to use, as I said, and it comes with this funny console, which lets you generate all your tests and stuff like that. Generally speaking, another reason why people use it, and one reason why we do sometimes, is because If you have a script, for any publications you do, keep the scripts and the data, right? I'm going to say that again. Keep the scripts, keep the data. If you do that, if anyone ever asks you, hey, how do I replicate your work, you give them the data and you give them the scripts. Or if you can't legally give them the data, which happens sometimes, then you can at least say, here's how you replicate it, and here's the columns for our spreadsheet. So that way, that lets other scientists replicate your work more easily. Does that make sense? Okay. So for example, in our lab, when we conduct a study nowadays, we have computer software that does all this experimental design stuff for you, because we don't want to do that crap. And then it tracks programmers as they do stuff, like hell, tons of stuff. And then we have an R script that automatically downloads all the data and puts it in the format R can use, and then it runs all of our analysis for us and spits out the answer. So basically, it automates a lot of our experimental workflow, because that makes sense. A lot of the stuff that we do is open source and free. If you want to steal it for some project you have for a master's thesis or something, you're totally welcome to it. It's all not so bad, but now you know. That's one way that the big kids do it, if you will. In terms of R itself, one of the first things to learn is that you make variables, just like most programming. By the way, there's only a few of you that haven't done programming. Can you identify yourselves, if you're willing? Or have all of you done programming? I thought there was two people that hadn't. Have you programmed before?
No.
Ah, okay, that's what I was asking. Yeah. So for those of you that are not as comfortable with programming, if you get confused by this, make sure you stop me. Because I want to make sure that you understand, right? And if you are an experienced person and like it's a little bit slow, please give people leeway because there's a diversity in this audience. And I just want to make sure we get everybody up to speed. Is that okay? Okay. So the first thing I want to do, if you have R up, I'm going to give you commands. We're going to start typing them in just so that everybody can kind of see what they do. Okay? And so the first thing that we often do in R is we make variables. So I'm going to say name, left arrow, dash, and I'll explain as I go. And I'm going to use, I often do work with the blind population. When I type code, I usually blow it up. If this bothers you, please let me know. But it does pixelate a little bit. But in this case, name is the name of the variable, and left left caret, I don't, what is that phrase? Less than, thank you, to myself. And then, yeah, and then dash means a sign. And weirdly, believe it or not, there's actually evidence that that character is more confusing to people. There's a paper by Linda McIver from the early mid-90s where she speculated it was better, but then that was disproven later by one of my papers. And so there's direct evidence that the equal sign is actually better, but that doesn't matter because that's not what R uses. It uses the left arrow. And then in R, there is a command that lovingly is called C, because that makes sense. And C tells you that you're going to basically chunk a bunch of stuff together. Kind of like an array. And I don't remember why it's called C. And I recall the last time I looked it up, it was a terrible reason anyway. So, sorry. But we say C, and then inside of this, we say Bob, Jill, Jane, Joe. Okay, and then I'm going to press enter. And because R gives you excellent feedback, it does nothing. I'm trying to give you the quirks along the way, right?
On the studio, it just executes the algorithm, and I see it.
R Studio is different. And like I said, R Studio is better, right? It's a lot better. So if you want to use R Studio, good. There's no problem with that. I'm just trying to show you what the R out of the box does, just so you know it's out there. But like I said, if you want to do this professionally, use RStudio. It is genuinely better. Okay. I don't know, maybe it'd be better to show you in that, but I'm not going to because I didn't prepare it that way. So. Okay, now if I press name, lo and behold, it shows me an array with those four items in it. Got me so far? Okay, now this is not useful generally, but this is the kind of thing you do in R to represent things like variables or categories or anything like that. Okay? Now let's do this again. In this case, we're going to say age. And then we're going to say C again. 24, 35, 22, and 47. And when we put it out there, voila, we get age. Now, technically, this is this static typing or dynamic typing? It would be dynamic. Dynamic typing because you don't have to declare the type. There's no annotation. And the evidence in the literature on static and dynamic typing tells us that this increases our productivity or decreases our productivity as developers. Do you know the answer to this? There's like 20 studies on it now. It decreases your productivity. So we have evidence in the literature that this is bad for you. But again, sorry. It is what it is. But I'm telling you this kind of stuff just because I want you to know the results that are in the literature.
Does it automatically recognize it as character because it's in
like... Mm-hmm. That's right. That's right.
Can you have like a mix?
I'm pretty sure that you can, but feel free to try it. Yeah. I'm 99.9% certain that you can do that. Okay. So there's the first thing.
Thanks.
Yeah.
For
yes?
For some reason, first there was my spelling mistake, but then I came this plus sign for some reason, and now we...
Okay. Excellent question. If you are in R and you get this weird plus, it's telling you, okay, it's telling you by not telling you that you have a syntax error somewhere. Okay. And I know that that makes no sense, but that is what it's saying. So like it's waiting for an extra symbol, it's waiting for an extra command. You might have a missing parentheses or a missing brace or something like that. That's usually what it means. I would have to look at your code to know exactly what the error is, but... Okay. Did you get it?
No.
Okay. Well, then, well, if you get stuck...
Yeah,
exactly. Okay, the next thing that you want to know is that in R, there's a thing called a data frame. And data frames are... Data frames are confusing not because they're inherently bad or good or something like that. They're confusing because they're really a mess in R. But you have to use them all the time. And the easiest way to think about a data frame is that it's basically a spreadsheet. It kind of looks-ish like a spreadsheet. And so, but you have to manipulate data frames in your code all the time. So the next thing that we're going to do is we're going to make a data frame, and it's going to look a little weird. We're going to say people, arrow. Then we're going to say data.frame, left paren, uppercase name equals lowercase name, and uppercase age equals age. And this statement is ridiculously confusing, but I'm going to type people and I want you to see what it does. Okay. I know that looks ridiculous. I'm sorry. It's R. R sucks. But it works. Okay, so the first thing is people is my variable and I'm assigning to it. And the data.frame is basically this operation that says make my spreadsheet for me, right? And then inside of this, I want a column of my table, and I want it to be named capital name, capital letter N name. I want a column of my table to be capital A age. And for each of those, I want to assign data to that of the two arrays that I made. By the way, if you still can't get it, sometimes in my case, I just like restart R.
Yeah, probably so, because it's, even there are the double I's.
Yeah, sometimes R just flips out. So I just reboot it and then start again.
Yeah, okay, maybe I should try that because
yeah.
It makes no sense.
No. It's necessary to take a capital letter. It's a work page.
That's probably true. I'm just showing you one specific way to do it. But R is one of those languages where there's like 1,000 ways to do it. So, in fact, there's so many ways to do it that the R community has argued about which way is best very heavily. In fact, they've argued about it so much that it's made it into the academic literature about which ways are better. And the common debate is called BASAR versus what's called tidyverse. And I'm not going to get into the debate, but this is just one way, and other scholars would disagree that you should do it this way. But I have to choose one. I have to choose one. I would actually say the consensus is this thing.
Alt-taste?
Say what? So that paper that I put in there, we actually tested that assumption. And so you can read it and come to your own conclusions. So I think that you're right, actually, from looking at the data. There's not much evidence either way. Like, it's a little bit inconclusive, I would say. But, you know, come to your own conclusion. In any case, if you can get to that far, the point is we got two columns, one's name and one is age. On the left-hand side is the number of rows. And then we've got two columns that are filled like that. Cool. With me so far? All right. And we can print it out, and you get the same thing that we have here. Now, inside of here, sometimes we want to reference items in our data frame. And for no particularly good reason, in R, you do that with the dollar sign. Why the dollar? Because reasons. Again, this is just one of those things where R is super quirky. It just is what it is. So if I type people dollar name, I get the levels of name, the items that are in there, basically. And if I say people dollar age, I get the levels in there. Levels in this context are like non-unique, I mean unique items. Right? So if you have them all the same, if there's a bunch of rows and there's only three items in it, it'll give you the levels of that. And these are often in a format that we often call wide. And although that's sort of quirky, it doesn't really matter. At the same time, no. My point is, R has different ways of representing the data, and I just want you to know that they do, but we're not going to go into how to do them all, because I don't want to spend time on all that kind of stuff. But there is a lot of options in that regard. Okay, so now what I'd like you to do, I have a table up here. See if you can figure out really quickly how to enter in that table as a spreadsheet. We've got five potential Sith Lords, all programming in Perl, and they're either Sith Lords or emo people. And so see if you can't enter that in. Take 3 minutes or 5 minutes and see if you can't code that out. Okay? Then I'll show you the answer. And be sure that Kylo Ren must be emo because he's obviously emo. Right? Right, Auntie? If you don't have a laptop, we'll try to go quick. That sounds like not a good idea. Oh, wait, no, you do. Oh, you just might have that. I don't have. You can download it, but whatever you want to do is fine. Now, as you're typing, keep in mind, most of the time when you're using R, you're not going to do this. The reason you're not going to do this is because you're going to load your data in a different way, because it would be crazy to try to retype it. I just want you to know how you manipulate some of this stuff a little bit. I can't imagine you type your data in. That would be nuts. Say what? By the way, just for the record, these dates here compared to when the Battle of Yavin was are historically accurate in the Star Wars universe. I checked. However, I'm unclear as to whether these SIP forms use Perl. Yeah, very long time ago. Far away. So, you never know.
Long time ago.
It's just random syntax anyway, right?
Reinvented here.
Exactly. Or George Lucas has his dates wrong. Maybe it's in the future. Okay, even if you haven't finished it, I'm going to pull it up. And I'm going to type it in. I'll go with you. Okay. So I'm going to say name. And then C. Kylo. Luke. Vader. Sidious, Plagueis. Okay. Now I'm not going to type in all of these, but I am going to copy paste it and cheat. And put that in. And if you'd like to, you can copy that, or you have access to the slides. If you want to, you can just copy paste. Okay, now, by definition, oftentimes once you have things in a format called a data frame, you can actually start doing operations, statistical operations, with your data. So believe it or not, if we had this data right here, technically we could start running statistical tests. Now, obviously our data is made up, but the point is that we could start doing stuff. And so the first thing we're going to do is we're going to plot. And I'm going to type this command called library, and it may not work for you, and I'll get to why. And I'm going to type in it ggplot2. Okay. And for you, you may actually get an error when you do this. So when you do it, someone tell me if you get an error.
Yeah.
What is the error?
No.
Yeah. So all of R is based on this thing called packages. And packages are a way that you can basically download code from another third party. Right? And the R community does care about making their code good, but they often use names like ggplot, which means nothing. Right? In order to get them, you have to use R's package manager. And we do that by going up to packages, package manager. And if you're on Windows, it's slightly different. Oh, no. Where is it? Package installer. Okay. And if I have this package installer, there's this thing that says cran binaries. And cran binaries is basically saying, find me the code for a particular package. And inside of this, I'm going to then say get list. And you'll notice that there is a ton of stuff. And you'll also notice that they're all named very well. So the ADCT package does what? Yeah, none of it's obvious. Unfortunately, this is one of the really serious benefits of R, that people are creative and put all sorts of stuff in. And it's also one of the big downsides of R, that it is a damn mess. Just an absolute cluster mess. ADGBQR, AED forecasting, Many of these things are actually really powerful statistical things that someone in the community made, but no one organized them. And so there, it's really, really crazy. But so what we do is we're going to go up to the package search. We're going to say ggplot. We're going to say ggplot2. Down at the bottom here, there's this thing that says install dependencies, and we're going to say install selected. And then it's going to go through a bunch of stuff. You just kind of have to let it run. And when you do that, you rerun that library command again, and you should be good to go. You with me? Does this work for everybody? This always follows people up, because it's confusing. So by a show of hands, how many people were able to get ggplot installed? Is there anyone that is stuck? Can you say that louder? And there's a lot of noise outside. I can't hear you. It is very slow. Yep, it's slow. If it's downloading stuff, you're in good shape. It'll go eventually. If it's not downloading, ask your neighbor. And maybe they can help you. Did you get it? Okay, good. I'll give you. RStudio would be in because Hadley Wickham works at RStudio. So it's probably going to load that package in on that.
Are you all in different?
Yeah, I bet it is. Hadley's nice guy. And he actually cares about usability, but he works in an ecosystem that's inherently unfriendly. So. Hadley's a much better statistician. He's a good. Do you know Hadley? Oh, if you're about at a conference, you have a chance to meet him. He's a good guy. Okay. Okay, now, once we've called library and once you're going, how many people have it installed now? Okay, so some are still working. I'm going to keep going, but I'll try to go a little bit slow. The next thing we're going to do is we're going to say ggplot, and we're going to type enemies as the name. And then this really esoteric command called AES, I'll explain that in a second. And we're going to have group time. I'm going to run that. And you'll notice, oh God, that's so small. What happens here is it generates a like impossible to read plot. Wow, it's so strange. Anyway. And this plot has nothing in it. We haven't told it to put anything in it. But it's generated a plot, and it's used the ggplot command and this AES command. AES stands for aesthetics. And so the way ggplot works as a command is it basically does plotting, and then you layer data on top of it, or representations of the data. So, for example, one representation of your data is the raw points plotted, right? And that is represented as geom underscore point, or whatever it is. There's tons of others. Geom histogram, geom bar plot, anything like that. So the point is, ggplot automatically takes your data, does something with it, and then plots it for you in a special way. Even though the commands are esoteric and hard to use, this is really powerful. Because you can visualize your data in all sorts of crazy ways, and you don't have to learn how to do it all. So it's a little bit simpler. And it's a lot more powerful than Microsoft Excel, which has like a couple modes. They're easier to use by a long shot, but they're not really publication quality compared to something like ggplot. So I'm going to type this command again by pressing the up arrow in my case. In this case, I'm going to put plus geom underscore point. Run it again. And it's hard to see, but it plotted the points of my graph. But they're really small. I don't really know why, but they're really small. might just be the monitor resolution or something, I'm not sure. So weird, whatever. Anyway, you get the idea. That's how you do a basic plot. The next thing that we're going to do is we're going to do a basic statistical test. And in this particular case, we're going to conduct what's called a t-test. How many people know what a t-test is? Okay, a t-test is a test between two experimental groups.
Or two groups. There's nothing special about a t-test.
There's a standard generalization, mathematical generalization of a t-test called a what? Anyone know? The generalization of a t-test is a... invented by Ronald Fisher. Anyone know? It's called an ANOVA. An ANOVA, or an analysis of variance, is mathematically and provably equivalent to a t-test if you have two groups. So if you ever read a paper and someone says that you have a t-test and you should have ran an ANOVA, you can gladly provide them a proof saying they are dumb. No. But you can tell them that. Keep in mind, however, although that's true, and that it is a mathematical generalization, an ANOVA, sometimes in R, we use the test that's not generalized like a t-test because it's a little bit easier in R. That's why I'm showing you that one first. T-test is easy to run. Some of the other tests are a little bit nastier. Okay, so to do this, we're going to type t.test, left paren, then we're going to do something really disgusting. We're going to say time tilde group, time tilde group, and then data equals enemies. And I know this is gross. I'm sorry. I really am. T.test is saying run a t-test. Time tilde group is saying look at the data frame that you have, get the time variable, subdivide it with the variable of group, the fact that it's emo and sith, and then pull your data source from enemies and put it in the data variable, which is internal to the function t.test.
Can you repeat that?
Yeah. R is nasty, I know. T.test is a function you're calling on a t-distribution, but time is the variable of interest that I care about. It's my dependent variable, or so they call it. Tilde is saying break it apart into two groups, in this case, by the levels of group, and the levels of group are emo and sith. So it's basically saying find all the emo ones, find all the sith ones, and then we're going to compare them. Then we're going to pull the source, enemies, and t.test has an internal variable named data, and we're going to shove it into there. Now, I know that that makes you all want to die inside, and that's awful. Unfortunately, this is kind of how R is always. Weird internal variables you have to connect to and stuff like that is what makes it so hard. And there's not a lot of evidence on R. In fact, I only know of one study, which we wrote. So, and evidence from that study showed that it basically destroys people. But nonetheless, I think that's the one that's in the folder, which isn't even out yet. So, get it? Okay, now you're thinking, all right, well, fine, R, you're hard to use, but at least you're going to output something really easy to understand for me. Unfortunately, that's a lie. What you get instead is this, which is, of course, super easy to understand, I know. Okay. The first thing is, it outputs the name of the test that it ran. And in this particular case, it's a Welch's two-sample t-test. And you might say to yourself, but dude, Stefik, you didn't tell me what a Welch's test was. You just said this was a t-test, and I haven't even talked about that yet. We will talk about these various tests tomorrow. But I will say this. When R chooses a test by default, it's usually the right one. In this particular case, the Welch's test does this funny thing with variance that you don't really need to care about, but that happens to be normally the right answer. It assumes unequal variances in a funny way. It's a reasonable default. A reasonable default. Okay? Now the next thing is, it says data time by group. And this is our tilde thing. It comes from the time variable, and it's grouped by the group variable emo versus sith. And then it gives you three values. And if you're not, how many people have not taken any kind of statistics? Okay, all of you have taken stats. Okay? Have you done t-tests in stats? How many people have done t-tests in stats? Only a handful. Okay. The t value is often called a critical value. It has to do with these little distributions. The df value is what? Anybody know? Did you learn it in Russian or English? And degrees of freedom. That's right. Degrees of freedom is kind of an esoteric thing that we don't really have time to talk about. It's a mathematical concept. But it's the kind of thing that you report in your statistics when you do APA reporting. And then finally, there's p-values, which we will get into tomorrow more. I'll show you some little videos and stuff. But in short, a p-value is giving you information related to whether this distribution is sort of reliable. This difference is reliable. It does not give you information as to how big the difference is, but it's trying to give you information related to the reliability of something. It has to do with, like, there will be some examples related to flipping a coin and stuff like that. Detecting whether a heads or tail, a coin is a fake coin, stuff like that. Unfair coin. Okay, the next thing is, it tells you your alternative hypothesis, which just means it's assuming that there's no difference, and what is the alternative? The alternative would be true difference in means is not equal to zero, and then the 95% confidence interval is there. And then it gives you, 95% confidence interval of the difference between the two groups. Like, with 95% confidence, the difference is of this size. And then it gives you the mean of the two groups. Sort of get it? Okay, now, when you use these tests, normally what you do is you get this kind of output and you interpret it, but before you do that, you almost always plot it and do some other stuff. We'll go over how you do that tomorrow. But I just want you to get familiar with this idea that basically what you do is you type in some data or you load in some data. Tomorrow we'll load it in instead from a spreadsheet. And then once you've loaded it in, you run it through a plotter, which is going to show you the data in some way. Then you can try to interpret it. And then, once you do that, you run it. Once you think you know what's going on, you run it through a statistical test, and then you get some kind of a mathematical confirmation of whether you're right. And then, inevitably, you find out that you were wrong, and you go back to the drawing board, and you redo your damn experiment, and you hit the table, and you get pissed at your professor because it's somehow his fault. I'm just kidding. It's always my fault. Sometimes your experiments fail. It's reality. Okay, was everybody able to get to this point? Good. Okay, perfect. So, that's all I wanted to show this afternoon, because I don't want to melt your brains, because R can be kind of nasty, and I want to save most of the analysis tomorrow, but I want you to be up and running, I want you to have ggplot installed and some other tool, and then tomorrow we'll generate a bunch of plots, and I'll show you how you interpret data from various kinds of experiments. If you have a repeated measures, how do you do it? If you have a this kind, how do you do it? If you have the other, how do you do it? And this will give you some sample code that you can use for your thesis and stuff like that. Sometimes there's better ways to do the data analysis in R that are a little bit cleaner, but nonetheless, this at least gets you started. So, okay, so we have actually an hour, and that's perfect. So what I want to do then, let's first spend a few minutes, let's first spend maybe 20 minutes going over our designs with on our own again to sort of hammer out some of the issues we were talking about here. After 20 minutes, let's get back together. I mean, we'll talk as a group, and let's start writing down our designs and getting our tasks put together. For your group, if you've already got certain things done, like you've got your tasks finished, you've got your design finished, then start fleshing it out into a package and figuring out that kind of stuff. If you don't, then, if you have all that done, which I doubt anybody does, but if you do, then start running pilots in your group, so that you can start to get a sense of like how it would go. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Can you explain the package part again?
Oh, sorry. Whenever you do an experiment in fields that actually use evidence, in computer science it's rare, but that's fine, you often create what's called a replication packet. And it consists of this. First, all the tasks. So you can do that. Second, all of the instructions for the task. That's super, super important. Like, and then third, a checklist of how you run it. Do this, do this, do this, do this, do this, do this. In addition to that, it includes either sample data or the real data, depending upon whether you can legally give it out. We often are restricted in the United States because of laws related to data. And I'm sure you guys are too, because GDPR is much more extensive. In Russia, I have no idea, because I just don't know what the laws are. And then finally, it includes an experimental script, which is the statistics. Right? So you want to put all that together. And the idea is, even though, you know, sometimes people are scared to give out replication packets because, you know, someone might find I'm wrong, that's not how science works. Science works by each of us proving each other wrong and being grown-ups about it when it happens, right? It is what it is. So the whole idea is we build these replication packets so that I can hand this to another research team and they can run the experiment. That's the idea. Okay, so let's take 20 minutes. Let's build what we can, see how far we can get. Let's get back up and let's figure out where everybody's at. Because we really only have one more day to do a planning, and then Friday we're going to run all these. I know they won't be perfect, but that's okay. At least you'll leave with some experience on how to do it. Okay?